Come on, everybody, please be seated. We'll call our first case, which is case number 58851, Wachovia Bank v. Kyle Acquisition Group. And Ms. Harp representing the appellants, Mr. Solberg representing the respondent. Okay, Ms. Harp, you may proceed. And just one clarification. Wachovia is now owned by Wells Fargo, isn't it? Is it in a subsidiary of Wells Fargo?
Yeah, I actually need to clarify that further. Wells Fargo very recently sold their interest as administrative agent to Stonehill Capital. It's now being held by a company called Kyle Agent. I'll file an appropriate substitution regarding interest.
Okay. Well, I didn't know if the Wachovia Bank entity still existed with all these bank machinations and all going on, so... Great. Thank you very much. That's a side issue, so I'm going to go ahead with the appeal then like that. Do you want to reserve any time for rebuttal?
I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes, you may do so.
I'm going to please the court. My name is Stacey Harrop. I'm representing the appellants of Wachovia Bank and CAG Property LLC. This is an appeal from an antiquated case that was filed by the Las Vegas Valley Water District to determine who had the best claim to a set of funds that were put on deposit with the district pursuant to a water facility agreement. The district court erred here in concluding that a separate settlement agreement regarding a New York action on guarantees meant that Wachovia waived its claim to those funds. Maybe I need to step back a little bit, starting with how Wachovia had a claim to the funds, is that Wachovia lent the money to Kyle Acquisition Group to develop the Kyle Canyon project. As part of security for the project was put up as security for that loan. Pursuant to secure, making sure that was secure, there was an assignment to all project-related contracts. That assignment became fully effective when Kyle defaulted on the loan back in 2008.
Now, is that an Article 9 assignment for personal property, or how would you characterize it? Or is it part of the deed of trust?
There was an Article 9 UCC filed. There was also a deed of trust, but there was also a separate assignment that covered basically all project contracts. And essentially to ensure once there was a default that all the project contracts would go to Wachovia should it want to continue the project, should things need to be done immediately, then Wachovia would step immediately into the shoes of Kyle with respect to any project-related contracts, security bonds, those sorts of things. And that's really the assignment under which Wachovia claimed an interest here, because it was a self-effectuating assignment that came effective upon Kyle's default. And it was a full and complete assignment. It left nothing for Kyle.
And that was a question of whether or not there was anything contingent or based upon the settlement agreements that occurred afterwards that purport to resolve all the disputes the parties had and everything underlying. From your standpoint, the assignment was fully effective and was not affected by the later settlement agreement.
Exactly. The settlement agreement sought to resolve disputes related to the project. The thing is, the interpleader was not a dispute as between Wachovia and Kyle. The Water District didn't want to be the party to decide who had the better claim because it didn't want to take on that liability, so it brought the interpleader action to the court. Wachovia simply was putting forth its claim to the funds to the court to decide. It didn't have a dispute with Kyle. It didn't file any sort of counterclaim against Kyle. There was no liability implicated against Kyle or any of the settling homebuilders by this interpleader action. It was simply a means for the claims to the funds to be resolved by the court so that the Water District wasn't put in a bad position. So that's why the settlement agreement didn't cover the interpleader action, because there was never a dispute between Wachovia and Kyle. It was Wachovia placing its claim to the funds before the court, and that claim was valid as of 2008, well before the settlement agreement ever came into effect. And the settlement agreement never purported to divest Wachovia of any interest in any project contracts or the funds here that were put on deposit pursuant to a project contract. And I think that if you look at the settlement agreement, the fact that a dispute was meant to be something that implicated liability or damages or something of that nature, if you look at the actual release language there, the releases were as to any liability or potential liability of the settling home builders that could arise out of any of the disputes or release claims as those were defined. And I think that's where the intent comes from, is that we're releasing any liability. This was not a case about liability. It was a case about whether or not Wachovia had a valid claim to a set of funds. And that's why the settlement agreement, that's why the district court erred here in applying the settlement agreement the way it did. And particularly here, the district court really only looked at the definition section of the settlement agreement. It looked at how release claim was defined and said, oh, it was released. But the definition of released claim did not actually release any claims. You had to actually go to the release language to see how that definition was used. And again, the definition was used in the release to say, we're releasing liability or potential liability of a selling home builder arising from a released claim. So the claims themselves were not released. It was only to the extent anything was implicating the liability or potential liability of selling the home builder. And the interpleader case simply didn't do that here.
But when a release form reads something like any and all claims arising here under, et cetera, doesn't that minimize your argument a bit? In that you were there, you were at the table, you had at least a claim to the funds. So does that release, how does that not affect your claim?
Well, how it doesn't affect in this case, again, is that there was no claim of a lien against Kyle. It was strictly a claim to the funds that were interpled into the district court. If we maybe take away from thinking about it as a pot of money, basically the district court in Kyle's position here is if anyone held a project contract, a third party, and said, nah, we're not going to give it to you because Kyle doesn't want us to, according to their position, then that third party doesn't have to hand over any project contracts ever. And that's where the real problem is that we have to look at what the assignment is. The settlement agreement didn't say that Kyle could step up and manufacture a dispute any time Wachovia tried to get their hands on a project contract, that suddenly Wachovia no longer had a claim to that contract. They were just trying to release liability for the debt that was owed.
Is it your position you were a secured creditor or were the owner of the funds in question?
Yeah.
Is it your creditor with a security interest in it or the owner? Which would it be?
In this case, the position is Wachovia is the owner of the funds because they were deposited pursuant to this project contract. Upon the assignment become fully effectuated, they fully stepped in the shoes of Kyle with respect to that contract, anything done pursuant to that contract. So they became the party, and Kyle was no longer the party. So once Wachovia became the party, if the Water District agreed to cancel the contract, then the funds had to be returned to Wachovia as being the fully assigned party to that contract at that point. There was kind of an implication that, well, if the Water District used the word rescind, so we have to put the parties back in the status quo. Well, first of all, it wasn't an equitable rescission pursuant to a court, and those kinds of ideas of equitable remedies don't really apply. It was two parties to a contract who mutually agreed to cancel the contract, and then they're trying to decide how the funds deposited from that contract should be distributed out. But even if you think that it is a full rescission that needs to put the parties back to the status quo, we have to then look at who were the parties to the contract at the time it was rescinded. And here it was Wachovia and Water District. The assignment was never rescinded. The assignment was never canceled. Wachovia fully stepped into the shoes of Kyle with respect to that contract. That's what an assignment does, is it divests the SMR of any control over the thing assigned. Kyle never had a position with this contract anymore. To put the parties in the status quo, you have to give the funds back to Wachovia as now the party to the contract. And I wanted to touch real briefly, too, on the dismissal that was filed with respect to the deficiency action. Now that dismissal, what it said is it will release the liability or potential liability of Kyle with respect to the deficiency action or any claim that could have been brought in that deficiency action. Now there's been some assertions by Kyle that this is a claim that could have been brought in the deficiency action. Well, that's not actually true. Wachovia never had a claim against Kyle. The assignment said that the assignment became effective without notice. without demand, without regard to any sufficiency of other security, and without having to bring an action or proceeding. There was never any claim for Wachovia to make in the deficiency action.
What would have happened? Let's say hypothetically, Kyle just paid off the loan to Wachovia, refinanced or whatever. What would have happened? Wouldn't you have released the claim to these water funds?
Well, at that point, the assignment would no longer have been effective. It was effective during a default or continuing default of Kyle. If Kyle managed to effectuate a cure, that would have canceled the assignment.
But doesn't that work against you, though, if you admit the assignment wouldn't be effective if they pay off the loan, when they dismiss the deficiency action, they've accepted the property, you know, in lieu of the remaining balance of the loan, and without the right to pursue any additional damages, so wouldn't that also include the water funds as well? Wouldn't that give Kyle the right to the water funds?
Not here. When you say that Wachovia accepted the property instead of pursuing the deficiency action, yes, but part of that property was everything the project was, including those project contracts and the bonds put up securing those contracts. That's all of the property.
Okay, so you're saying that's all part of the property in total. That's why I was kind of thinking about this as like a blackboard thing, trying to but if it was part of the deed of trust, you know, security, I think that makes sense. But if it's a separate Article 9 security, I don't know if you can add it together. Yeah, I'm trying to work this out in my mind. You know, it's a perfect bar exam question for law students and all on Article 9.
Understood. You know, unfortunately, I didn't go back and read through the deed of trust because we based our claim on the assignment. But my recollection is the deed of trust, as these kinds of deed of trusts usually are, very comprehensive in covering anything that they wanted to secure the loan, which was here the project itself, which is why they did a comprehensive deed of trust, they did a comprehensive Article 9 filing. But then they also did an assignment, trying to make sure any bases were covered to ensure that the project itself and anything produced pursuant to that project was part of the security for the loan.
Part of the troubling thing in the summary judgment, whether they talk about pursuant to a confidential settlement agreement, specifically they talk about sections 4 and the subsections, but like Kobe expressly releases Kyle from, among other things, any and all disputes and claims as defined therein arising out of or in any way relating to Kyle's and the development of the real property. And the language is so expansive there that it's kind of frightening in terms of, it talks in terms of the confidential agreement and gives these very expansive terms about it. Why shouldn't the court be concerned with that? And I realize your argument has been about what the water district should do, but if we don't have this valid assignment, then the water district is stuck with the party they contracted with.
Correct. I think if the assignment were not valid, then yes, then they're stuck with
Kyle. And the question is, because of this language about confidential agreement, is there anything in that that we should be concerned with?
Within the definite, I apologize, Ryan, I'm not quite understanding.
In the summary judgment, when they talk in terms of pursuant to dismissal order, in the terms of a confidential settlement agreement specified, this is the court's language. By clearly expressly release Kyle from, among other things, in and out, and it was on very expansively. So how is the court to construe that? And it talks in terms of pursuant to a confidential settlement agreement.
We have the settlement agreement is in the joint appendix under seal on this case. That paragraph is actually where we say the district court erred. Those recitations of 4A, 3, 2, I can't remember the exact numbers, but those, again, are the definitions of dispute and released claim. Kyle was not released in those definitions. It just did a fairly expansive job of outlining what those things were, but the release was actually as to the selling homebuilders, not Kyle himself, and only to the extent it indicated the liability or potential liability of the selling homebuilders.
Okay.
Unless there's further questions, go ahead.
You have about a minute and a half left.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Solway.
Good morning. May it please the court, Kevin Solway here on behalf of Kyle Acquisition Group, LLC.
And I just note for the record that Wachovia is no longer the proper party in interest, and I believe counsel will substitute in the correct party of interest since the property has been sold. This is a case of three lawsuits going on at the same time. You've got a deficiency action being held in Nevada, you've got a New York action against the guarantors, and then you have this fight with the Water District for the deposit of this $2 million. And this was to get resolved. It was to resolve anything and everything that the home builders were concerned about that went into this confidential settlement agreement. This is a confidential settlement agreement that's unambiguous in its language. It's intended to resolve all disputes,
including with the guarantors, all the New York litigation, everything.
For those that sign this agreement, that's correct.
So the in and all question that I ask the appellant in this case is actually your entire argument. This was intended to resolve any and all claims arising from, et cetera, et cetera.
You just have to look at the footnote in the settlement agreement. It says for the avoidance of doubt, so that there's no confusion, so that there's no discussion, so there's no, contrary argument. It says for the avoidance of doubt, and they're footnoting the definition of disputes.
Okay,
it says this should be read expansively, as you said, Judge.
But let's go back. Counsel makes the point that this assignment was effective when it occurred. And there's nothing in that agreement that carves it back out and said, oh, just forget about that assignment. It didn't happen. How should we deal with that argument?
Judge, this talks about all claims, and not
including
claims.
But
claims under the assignment. It is included in here.
But if she says
about all claims with those loan documents,
this fact occurred, the assignment was in full, that's the position, so why should it be turned over if the settlement agreement does not go back? Because it's resolved. It's done. It's been assigned.
Judge, the settlement agreement resolves all disputes relating to Kyle and to the project. And if you look at the language particularly, it says all disputes and controversies now existing, which is this was existing at the time the settlement agreement was signed, that in any way relates to Kyle, which is this, and it relates to the loan documents, which includes this assignment of contract, and it's to settle, it's to buy peace, it's to get rid of everything that deals with Kyle. That's the whole purpose of this, that's why they put the footnote in there. And if you look at the release itself and you go to the language, it says again on page 5 of this confidential agreement, it says this phrase, for the avoidance of doubt, release claims shall also mean and include the following, and this is what Judge Gonzalez relied on. Number one, all disputes in connection with Kyle. And this suit was going on for almost 2 years at this time. It was handled by a different law firm rather than this firm, but it was going on, and it was intended in New York to settle that suit, the deficiency action. And it says with regard, in connection with Kyle regarding the improvement and the collateral. You look at subsection 4. It says this is intended to settle all claims against Kyle itself. All claims against Kyle itself relating to the debt, relating to the credit agreement, amended credit agreement, which references the assignment. And then if you go to subsection B, it says, again, it has this phrase, for the avoidance of doubt, release claims does not include and specifically includes any obligations, claims, or disputes bound between the co-owner and the lenders and builders regarding blah, 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 other than Kyle and the project. They could have carved this out if they want to, but instead language was put in there, other than Kyle. The exception to the release says other than Kyle. And for the avoidance of doubt, there's no question this was negotiated, this was settled. They wanted the deficiency action over with the dismissal. They wanted this case over. And if you look at the covenant not to sue in paragraph 6 says the lender releasers agree not to commence or continue any release claims against anyone relating to Kyle. The covenant not to sue is don't continue the lawsuits. And then it has another exception, except with regard to claims served against focus group and Ritter, etc. They could have carved this out again and that, but they didn't.
Mr. Sheldon, I think counsel is arguing that the assignment of funds to Wachovia was like an absolute assignment. They were the owner of the funds, so therefore it wasn't part of this whole package of what was available. Is it your position just a security for the loan, or what? How would you characterize
it? It's referenced in the credit agreement. They're claiming that it's security for the loan. We've claimed that this was money that my clients provided on a capital call. This is not lender's money. This $2 million
wasn't proceeds.
It was not proceeds from the loan.
Okay.
This was our money. This was the client's money. They did a special capital call. They put the money. You look at the water improvement agreement. It doesn't say this money's security. It doesn't say that it's a bond or it's anything relating to a bond that they claim that they're entitled to. It says this is for development of the project, for design and development. This is our share.
Mm-hmm.
And when the water district realized that they weren't going to design and develop this project, they said, we're going to rescind this water facilities agreement. We're going to give the money back. It's our money. And we claim that we have rights to it. And the release particularly says, by the way, you don't have any claims against Cal for anything. And so just to be sure, for the avoidance of doubt, this money that we got, or you could have carved it out, you didn't, this comes back to us. But there's no terms in the assignment itself that gives them this money after the release.
Judge Gonzalez granted summary judgment in your favor on this. Is this an issue of law in your mind, or is there any type of factual dispute involved?
This is an issue of law. There's really nothing factually disputed.
As you say, it's your money, but yet an assignment was granted as of this. Am I correct on that point? You agree?
They did sign an assignment that related. It didn't specifically mention this agreement, but it was an assignment that was granted for any rights that they had with regard to this project.
As of various projects, and this was one of the projects. Is that
yes,
not
that's correct?
Okay. And I guess my question really comes down to, if we have an assignment of rights and it's fully vested, and then there's no mention as to setting an assignment aside, that's the quandary I have.
Judge, there is a mention of setting the assignment aside, and it's in the release language itself.
If you point me to it and give me a...
Absolutely. If you look in the definition of dispute of claims, number one, it says anything relating to Kyle. And we had a dispute going on at the time the settlement agreement was signed.
Let's back up then.
Sure.
You say you have a dispute, but if we have an assignment that's fully assigned, how is it still disputed? I guess that's my concern.
And that's what I was about to say, Your Honor. We had a counterclaim actually against them. We had a lawsuit against them with regard to the water district action. We were suing them. We had a lively dispute. This was something they knew about, something that we were arguing that they didn't have rights under the assignment. We were contesting that. It was a hard-fought litigation. And we said, okay, let's settle this case. And let's settle all these cases that relate to the home builders. So the release took care of that, and they could have carved out that exception. I hope that answers your question, Alan.
Go back in the original language.
Okay. But, and you also, you also have the dismissal itself, with the order from Judge Gonzalez. It talks about the dismissal language, which says that defendant, which is Kyle Acquisition Group, has been released from any liability, this is in the deficiency action, alleged in this case, and no suit or other proceeding, it talks about other proceedings, shall hereafter be commenced or continued. That was in the stipulation to dismiss. Other proceedings against Kyle should not be continued. And that was in the order itself. So, you've got a situation where the release is clearly on its face relates to this, that you've got a lawsuit where, it's an interpleader action, but we have an actual counterclaim against them. The release was for Kyle's benefit, and they're entitled to the money because this was three litigations going on at the same time. They were trying to settle and resolve it. They released the claims. They accepted the settlement funds, which were confidential, which I don't even know how much they were, and they accepted the properties. from the settlement funds in lieu of any and all other claims.
Is this your position? I know you have several arguments, the release, the dismissal, and all that. This is dismissal of the deficiency action, terminate any right of Wachovia to these funds.
I believe it does. I mean, the judge's order actually does state the dismissal order was what she considered, and that it does, in addition to the confidential settlement agreement, cut off any rights to these funds. I don't have anything else unless you have any questions for me.
Questions from colleagues?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you very much, James.
Ms. Herrick, you have about a minute and a half, and you can respond to Mr. Stallworthy.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I can just address a couple points real quickly. As Kyle mentioned, they sued Wachovia in a counterclaim and a pleader action. Well, that counterclaim really was nothing other than attempting to declare that they were the owners of the funds. It would have been the same thing if they hadn't bought the counterclaim. It's just rival claims to a set of funds for the court to decide.
Well, this is any and all claims, so doesn't it isn't a pretty broad language?
Well, then Kyle released a claim against Wachovia. Wachovia never brought a claim against Kyle. It never continued a claim against Kyle.
What about the counterclaim by Kyle against Wachovia for the water funds? Isn't that an active claim that Mr. Stallworthy talked about?
Yes, it was an active claim that Kyle brought. Wachovia certainly couldn't release someone else's claim.
Okay.
And these releases were meant to be mutual, so to the extent that Kyle's released because it somehow implicated viability of selling home builders, then their claim also had to be released. Kyle says, well, we're just a third-party beneficiary, and nobody bothered to ask for a release for us. Well, that's ridiculous. Kyle wasn't a signatory to the settlement agreement. The releases were meant to release liability of selling home builders and as between them and Wachovia. That's why they're expressly made mutual. Now, to the extent that a claim against Kyle could implicate that liability, that's what was released. And that's why that's within the definitions of dispute and release claim. But again, you have to see how those definitions are used within the release language themselves. I believe that's all I have on that point.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for your excellent arguments and briefs, and we will take this case under submission. Okay,